Welcome to another episode of the Gets My Goat podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I'm so glad you guys are here. Today we're going to be talking about preventative care for your goats. A little bit about some vaccines, deworming, vitamin and mineral supplements and deficiencies, things like that. So some of the common vaccines that are used today for goats are CDT, or enterotoxemia and tetanus, chlamydia vaccines, and some sore mouth vaccines. So enterotoxemia is known as the overeating disease. It can really, really make your goat sick. Let me pull up my enterotoxemia information here. This is one, this particular vaccination is one that I give to my bottle baby goats. I should probably give it to my goats that are raised on their moms, but I definitely give it to my bottle baby goats because they have a very notorious reputation for eating too much and getting themselves sick. So, what is enterotoxemia? So, it is caused by two bacteria strains called Clostridium perfringens, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, and the strain types C and D of Clostridium perfringens. They're normally found in the gastrointestinal system as it is, but if they get too high, if those bacteria overpopulate, that's when the animal gets sick. So usually what you're going to want to look for, the signs of enterotoxemia, is they may go off their feed, they may show signs of stomach pain, like, you know, kicking at their bellies or laying down and getting up and rolling over. They may have diarrhea, which in some cases may have blood in it. And in very, very severe cases, they may even lose their ability to stand and extend their legs. They may kind of take on a strange posture, which is caused by the toxins released by the bacteria reaching the brain. And at that point, it's kind of hard to bring them back. But it is treatable with the C&D shot. So it may not, once it reaches severe cases, it may not be successful, but it's always worth a try. Prevention of the disease in the first place is always easier than treating this disease after it's been contracted. And of course, vaccinating for it is the cornerstone of prevention. Multiple vaccines that you can try that kind of help with the immunity to it. But it's important to get them early. There's forms of it that have tetanus along with it in three-way vaccines because they induce protection against the bacteria involved. So please do keep an eye out on that in your young animals, but it can affect goats and sheep of all ages. It is not just it does not just affect babies or even just affect bottle babies. It can affect them at any stage of life, either goats or sheep. Good grain, sheep or goats that are eating, a lot of grain in their diet or that are allowed to graze on pasture, should have more frequent vaccination for this disease because it can, some producers immunize higher risk animals 2 to 4 times a year, just to make sure that they're protected. So please do get C&D on board. And don't forget, make changes to feed slowly. Don't just changes their food overnight. A good recommendation is a quarter of the new food to three quarters of the food that they're already on for a week. And then you do half and half for a week. And then you do three quarters of the new food to a quarter of the old food for a week. And then you can, after about a month, you can change them over to completely eating the new food that you want to switch them over to. Chlamydia. So chlamydia can lead to pink eye, it can lead to weak kids, and it can lead to abortions in some cases. But abortions in goats can be caused by a variety of problems, even some non-infectious origins. So chlamydia has sidikai? Chlamydia sidikai? I can't even pronounce that. It is an STD, I believe. So don't just worry about it in your pregnant does, or don't just worry about it in your does. You also need to be treating your kids and your bucks for it, because they can also get it. So keep an eye out. The test for chlamydia cannot, so after an abortion, after your goat aborts, if you suspect chlamydia, you can't test it until after she's already lost the baby. So there is no prenatal, I guess, if you want to say, test for it. You have to use samples of either the placenta or the baby itself after, you know, if it's born dead, and send it, you know, give those samples to your vet to send off for testing. There is no test before the animal aborts, so it's hard to tell whether or not she has chlamydia, unfortunately, until it's too late, basically. It does respond, so treatment, it does respond to tetracycline. LA-200 also will get it, and LA-200 is a broad-spectrum antibiotic. So I hit my dose in the spring and in the fall with LA-200 and Safeguard dewormer, which we will get to in a minute. But so for treatment of that, there is tetracycline, or Oromycin will also get it. So you want to treat, you want to do a dose 60 and 30 days prior to her being with a buck. So 2 months before she goes to the buck and a month before she goes to the buck, you're going to want to treat her with some injectable tetracycline. So for pink eye, pink eye, for those of you who have had it or have seen it, you know this about it, but for those of you who have not heard about it or have not had it or have not seen it, it is very contagious. Very contagious. So if you have a goat that has an eye problem that you suspect may be pink eye, wash your hands before and after handling that animal. Make sure she is away from the other animals, because again, it is very contagious, and do not touch your hands or face after you have treated her eye or after you touched her eye, because it is zoonotic, actually. It is able to be passed from animals to us and from us to animals. And the way some of the characteristics of pink eye is they will be squinting because their eye burns and is very sore. Their eye will be watering because it's very irritated. And the sclera, or the white of the eye, the eyeball itself, can be kind of red and injected or bloodshot. And the conjunctiva, so if you pull down your eyelid and you see that kind of pinky, fleshy stuff behind your eyelid, that's the conjunctiva. And that part will also be sort of red and sore and inflamed and very angry looking. In that case, it is also treatable with tetracycline, but it's an ophthalmic, meaning it's made for the eye, form of tetracycline. So, and you can get that from your vet, from your veterinarian. They'll be happy to help you out with that. So that's a little bit about chlamydia and a little bit about treating chlamydia. We covered enterotoxemia. So let's talk about vitamin B and thiamine deficiency. So thiamine deficiency is also known as polio in goats. It is caused when the rumen is not functioning properly, or the digestive system is not functioning properly, so they cannot turn carbohydrates into glucose to give them energy. They can start having neurological symptoms such as muscle issues, muscle weakness, stiffness, lethargy. They'll go down basically, and they won't be able to get up. So that's what to look out for that. It is treatable again with thiamine because they get very low on thiamine. So your vet will come out and give them a shot, and probably give them a shot of vitamin B also. But it's not probably just going to be a one and done situation. You will probably have to have multiple shots. Like, it'll probably be a series for a couple of days, or they'll do a shot and then have you give another one in a week. It just kind of depends on what they want to do. But vitamin B, it's not a bad idea anytime you have an animal that goes off its feed, or just, starts kind of having some issues eating. It's not a bad idea to give them some vitamin B, because again, it's necessary for their metabolism and how they process carbohydrates to help give them energy. So vitamin B can be an oral liquid, which is over the counter, so you don't have to necessarily have a prescription. You can probably get it, from your feed store maybe, or there is an injectable. So both the injectable forms of vitamin B and thiamine will both require a prescription from your vet because they are concentrated. So you cannot get the shots over the counter. So let's talk about deworming. So deworming, there is a type of worm that I am going to pull up now. This worm is called the barbapole worm, but the scientific name for it is Haemonchus contortus. It is microscopic, meaning, of course, that you cannot see it with the naked eye. It will have to be looked at under the microscope by your veterinarian. Most of the time, at the vet clinic that I work at, most of the time, someone comes in and says, "I see worms in my, dog's poop or whatever. I think it needs deworming." And that's true. Once you see it, you have to address it. If you suspect that your animal has worms, if you suspect that your goat has worms, not a bad idea to go ahead and, give it a course of deworming. If you see worms, definitely go ahead and give it a course of deworming. But if you're fairly certain that there's no worms, if you're really good at keeping things clean, keeping food off the ground, if you've never really had trouble with worms before, you could probably just keep an eye on it and not necessarily treat it. But if you want to be extra safe, treating for worms once or twice a year is definitely not a bad idea. So this worm, Haemonchus contortus, or the barber pole worm, is a worm that lives in the intestinal system, in the gut, and it is a blood-sucking worm. So it can lead to anemia, it can lead to just illness and weakness in general. They just won't act right. And in severe cases, because it is a blood-sucking worm, it can lead to death. So it's very important to address this, and your vet will know exactly what to do and what to give for that particular worm. Definitely it's worth getting a fecal examination to rule that out for sure, because like I said, it can definitely be a killer. There's other worms such as hookworms, whipworms, tapeworms, things like that that they can get that are visible with the naked eye that you probably will see in their poop. But it's the ones that you can't see that you have to worry about. So what do you do about worms? What's a good dewormer to use for them? Well, there's a few. The one that I use is called Safeguard. There is a Safeguard for horses, and there's a Safeguard for goats. You can get it at your local feed store. It's an over-the-counter, definitely. So it's a white bottle with a green and yellow label, and the one for goats will have a picture of a goat on it, and the one for horses will have a picture of a horse on it, so it's fairly easy to determine. And that's fairly broad spectrum. It doesn't get everything, but it is fairly good at getting, the big ones, hookworms, tapeworms, whipworms, things like that. Please do, before giving any medication, I just want to say this really quick, before giving any type of medication to your animal, make sure that you check the bottle and check the dosage so that you are not overdoing it or underdoing it. And please make sure, if you have any questions, that you are checking with your veterinarian to make sure that you're doing what's best for your animal. Another type of dewormer that I like is ivermectin. So ivermectin comes in three forms. There is a drench, which will kind of pour over. Drenches are also called pour-ons. There's an injectable, and there's a dust. So it's kind of like a powdery thing, and you literally just kind of shake the powder over them and just kind of, work it in. Wash your hands afterwards, but you can just shake it over them and does pretty good. That does good for ectoparasites, parasites that live on or in the skin. Ticks, fleas, lice, mites, things like that. And I believe it also does good with endoparasites, but mostly for parasites of the skin and hair. Parasites that like to live in the hair. And again, ivermectin is a really good dewormer. If you want to go the natural route, chemical-free, there are some options. Apple cider vinegar is a pretty good dewormer. It also helps to kind of balance the pH of the body, enhances the alkaline levels in the gut, and makes it an unfit living habitat for worms. So if you just add a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar to the water every day, it can also kind of help their hair coat, and it can help their milk production. It helps out reducing mastitis, decreases urinary calculi in bucks to prevent bladder stones and urethral stones, things like that. Apple cider vinegar is really good. Some people like to use essential oils, garlic and clove, things like that are really good. A couple of drops of garlic or clove oil in water are good for prevention, not necessarily for treatment, I wouldn't say, but for prevention is better. It does the same type of thing. It just makes things in the body less livable for endoparasites that would live inside them. So there's actually a natural goat dewormer recipe. I have not tried this. So if you do try it, please feel free to let me know how it works. So you're going to take a pumpkin and hollow out the pulp and seeds. Make sure that they're hollowed out and you can use the pumpkin as a bowl. Put the pulp and seeds in a blender and blend it on high to kind of chop it up. Add a whole head of garlic, skin and all, and 2 carrots. Drizzle a few tablespoons of blackstrap molasses and blend it in with everything until it's all chopped up and mixed nicely. They love molasses, so that might make it a little bit more make it a little bit more easier for them to eat. Mix it together, scoop it into a bowl, and add some alfalfa pellets and a scoop of black sunflower seed oil, and just use a spoon to mix that in. If you want to make it extra good, you can add some probiotics and an array of, herbal things, natural herbal dewormer, things like that. You add the pumpkin mixture to the hollowed out pumpkin, and there you go. You can just set it in the goat pen for them, and they'll chew on it and nibble at it, or at least they should. Again, I have not made that one. I have not made this recipe before, so I'm not actually sure if they would eat it or not, but it's worth a try. So let me see here, what's next? Oh, sore mouth. Let me bring up my sore mouth information. So sore mouth, again, same as pink eye. I just want to say, sore mouth is very contagious. People can and have gotten it from their goats. So, and I'll probably say this again before I'm done with this part of the conversation, but sore mouth is very contagious. So make sure that you're washing your hands before and after dealing with a goat that has sore mouth. Whether you're treating it, whether you're checking on her, make sure that you are washing your hands before and after, and do not touch your face or your eyes for that matter. So, it's a viral disease of the pox virus family. It's also known as scabby mouth or eczema, not eczema, or pustular dermatitis. So, mainly what people see when they see sore mouth is kind of crusties or lesions around the lips, mouth, and nose. It's present everywhere, present worldwide, and it can lead to the development of very painful sores on their lips, gums, mouth, nose, their face. And it's not just constrained, contrary to the name, it is not just constrained to the mouth. They can get it anywhere, pretty much on their body, including and often seen in the udder. So, and sheep can get this too. So, the udder, when they get it in the udder, they usually get it from, a doe will get it from a kid who's nursing on her, who has it, who will, come and suckle and then pass on the, the virus, the illness, the pox to it, and it will form the lesions and the scabs on her udder, which can then turn into open wounds, and the open wounds invite other bacteria, of course, and it can lead to a secondary, not primary, secondary mastitis, worst case scenario. So if you have a kid with sore mouth in your herd, you need to pull that kid out and make sure that he's not infecting his mama. Also, another complication of this disease is fly larvae. Sometimes open wounds that are kind of sore and owie can attract flies at certain times of the year, of course, warmer seasons usually. They will then lay their eggs in that nice, soft, fleshy skin, and those eggs will hatch into maggots, and so they will have issues with that. So do please get you're going to want to get a handle on sore mouth as soon as you see it. Quarantine the animal, pull the animal out of the herd that you see it in to treat it and keep an eye out for the rest of the animals in the herd so that you can get them all healthy and make sure that they're all good. Do not pick the scabs. It's going to be very tempting. You're really going to want to, but do not pick the scabs because that is the body's way of trying to heal it and deal with it and get rid of it. And every time you pick the scab, the body is just having to start all over again with healing it. So don't pick the scabs off of them. So indirectly with sore mouth, they can also pass the virus on through eating and drinking equipment, bedding, through the fence. Chances of a severe outbreak in artificial rearing systems, such as kids that will share the nipple or a milk bar, creep feeders, anything like that. So if you do end up having a bit of an outbreak, you're going to need to clean everything. Clean feeders, waters, you know, clean milk bars, bottles, anything like that. And it sounds scary, but don't be intimidated. Go to your vet and get the correct medication for it. So clinical signs, the little lesions will start multiplying on the skin, and after a couple of days you'll probably see little pustules begin, and then there's sometimes some swelling that goes on around the, you know, skin or the lips and nose and mouth. They can get it on their eyes, ears, limbs, genital areas, and of course we already talked about them getting it on the udder and teats. And again, said this before, but again, it is highly contagious. You need to know that it is very contagious, so be very careful when you're dealing with this. Mild cases usually kind of just run their course. Again, if you leave the scabs on them, just kind of let them do their thing, it'll get better. But if it's not, supportive care by antibiotics and antibiotic ointments may be needed. So make sure that they keep eating, but if they get worse or if they're not getting any better, I would suggest something like a triple antibiotic, possibly some Neosporin, Polysporin, something antibiotic based that you can probably get over the counter, or you can go to your vet if you would like to. So there's that. Let me see. Let's see if we can talk about some probiotics here for just a minute, because probiotics are also very important. Probiotics, goats, their digestive systems are very delicate and very, you know, lots of things going on. Lots of bacteria, lots of pH, lots of acid, of course. So probiotics in a goat's world are very important. So there's, I actually don't know if they make Advita for goats, but one probiotic in particular that I know of that they do make for dogs and cats is called Advita. So probiotics and digestion. Probias is a good one. Probias comes in powder, comes in a gel, for ruminants. The stuff that I'm seeing right now is for bovines, for cows, but they do make one specifically for ruminants and, you know, for goats. That's gonna help their bacteria even out in their gut. So it's important. to do that, and when you would do that is for diarrhea, for upset stomach. If they go off their feed, we did mention putting them on some vitamin B, but if they go off their feed, having some probiotics on hand is not a bad idea. Because you never know. So it's serves as a source. Think of it as they need, this is how they're getting their beneficial bacteria. So if they get a little sick and they're kind of wonky, not really feeling very good, this will help kind of level them out and fix the bacteria in the in their gut so that they can move on. And also a cheaper form of this that we used for our goats. You can also do this with yogurt. I like to do it with Greek yogurt or plain yogurt. I would not recommend doing it with flavored yogurt, such as strawberry flavor, peach flavor, blueberry. You know, I would just do plain yogurt if you can find it, or plain Greek yogurt. You're not probably gonna hurt them. I would not give them a ton, but they could probably have a decent amount. Probably at least once, if not twice a day, for at least a couple of days. Probably 3 days, maybe a week would not be a bad idea. Or if you're giving it to them because you've noticed some diarrhea, or until their stool returns to normal. So just kind of keep an eye on that, and just that's a little hack that I have for you. You can use yogurt instead of getting probiotics or an actual probiotic, but I do recommend a probiotic if you can get a hold of one, because it's going to be much more specific. And it will have much more of the stuff that they actually need in it for them. So those are just a couple of ideas. Bantamine. Bantamine is another good one. Bantamine can help stop severe diarrhea, brings down fever in young kids, calms digestive problems, relieves pain and soreness, you know, from bites and injuries. However, you can't use it more than once every 36 hours because it can cause some damage to their organs, and you can only get it from your vet. I don't believe there's not an over-the-counter Bantamine as far as I know, and you do need to refrigerate that. So there's a good one, and I mentioned LA200. LA200 is another safe bet. Again, it's a antibiotic broad spectrum. However, goats typically don't like LA200 because it's thick and it's very painful to them. It's really, really sore. It's an intramuscular injection, so it goes. I usually give it in the back leg, kind of in the thigh muscle area, and they don't like it. So. There is a non-sting version called Bio-Myosin. You can use it for pink eye, but you also have to refrigerate that. So, okay. Now that is not by any means all of the stuff that's available out there. That's just the tip of the iceberg and just some basic preventative care. Most of these things, LA200, Terramycin, Probiotics, those type of things are things that you're probably going to want in your arsenal, in your supply kit, just for in case you never know what's going to happen. But those are just a few of the things that you can use for preventative medicine in your herd. And I think we'll go ahead and call it good there. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you learned as much as I did. I just want to give a quick shout out to the Bell Life. Trey and Justin Bell, go over and check out their YouTube channel. It's super cool. Super good guys, really hilarious videos. Go ahead and go check out The Bell Life. And also, Tea with Mike is a really cool podcast you can check out there. This guy is a major tea enthusiast like myself. He interviews lots of cool guests on his podcast. He actually had one guy that was just on The Voice recently. So go ahead and check out Tea with Mike and let him know what you think of it. Thanks for watching, and please check out my YouTube channel, Gets My Goat by Rachel Howell. If you have any suggestions, questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts or YouTube videos, please do let me know, and I'll be happy to address those. Thanks for listening, and next time we will be talking about my favorite subject, the kidding season. What is it? When is it? Why do we breed does? And how do we have successful kidding seasons? Join us next time. Hello, thank you for joining me again, and welcome to another episode of Gets My Goat by Rachel Howell, the podcast. I'm super excited about today's episode because today we're going to be talking about what is possibly my favorite part of having goats, the kidding season. So, what is kidding? No, that does not mean I'm telling a joke. Kidding is the term used to describe a goat giving birth. And the reason behind that is because a kid is a baby goat. So a goat's offspring, or a young goat, pretty much from the time of birth to weaning, is called a kid, or birth to a year probably, is considered a kid. So kidding means that a doe is giving birth to her baby. So today, some of the topics we're going to cover, some of the things we're going to talk about is when is it, how does it happen, why do we breed does, what kinds of supplies do you need to have ready before your doe has her babies, what's the labor process, when to call the veterinarian, and some stuff like that. So goats are polyestrous, or sometimes seasonally polyestrous, I believe, depending on the breed. So breeds like Nubians, which is what we raised when I was growing up, breeds like Nubians will pretty much be able to be bred anytime throughout the year, as long as they are, when they've been exposed to a buck, they usually come into heat if they're not already in heat by the time they're exposed to a buck. And usually most breeds follow that criteria of pretty much being able to be bred at any time of the year. However, we usually will breed our goats in the fall so that they can carry their babies through the winter and kid in the spring and have their babies in the spring a little bit before or right as the weather is starting to warm up. They usually will kid around April. So like right now, one of my goats, as we speak, is at the breeder to have babies next spring. So that's the timeline that we use. That's the time of year that we usually like to breed them. And that's because we have our fair is in August. So gestation period for a goat is 5 months. So November, December, January, February, March. They'll kid in April. And then we usually leave them on the moms for about 2 months. So May, June. Sometimes three, so they might be on there till July, and then we'll probably milk them the whole month of July and most of August until fair is over, and I usually will dry them up pretty much as soon as we get home from fair for a couple of months until the next breeding season. So let's talk about where it starts, the heat cycle. How can you tell when and if your goat is in heat? Well, generally, there's about 10 or so signs that will clue you into the fact that your dough may be getting ready to go into heat, is in heat, or is getting close to the point of her heat cycle where she will be receptive to a buck. It should be noted that not every doe will exhibit all 10 of these signs. Some will exhibit certain signs that you'll be able to notice, and then others will have different signs or no signs at all. Same for the signs when they're going into labor and getting ready to have their baby. Sometimes they're fine 1 minute, and then the next they've had their baby, and then others it's super obvious and super easy to catch them, but that's not the case with all of them. Every doe is different, so keep that in mind. So sometimes the doe will get more talkative. They'll walk around the goat pen just kind of bleating and making noises, not blood, but bleating, and making noises, you know, screaming and grunting, and, you know, those of you who have goats know what I'm talking about. Nubians in and of themselves are very talkative, so that part of the sign of heat cycling for them may not be as easy to notice. Bucks, on the other hand, will sort of do the same thing. When they are in rut, or when they are wanting to breed does, they will also sort of do the same type of thing. They'll kind of moan and blubber and make all sorts of funny noises. If you've never heard what a buck sounds like when he's around a doe in heat that he really wants to get at, you might want to look that up on YouTube, because they are hilarious. So they'll get talkative and they'll make lots of noise, sometimes more noise than normal, and you may notice that. Sometimes they will wag their tail, or have their tail just kind of upright in a kind of funky position constantly. This is called flagging. They will do this when they are signaling the buck that they are ready to be bred. So this is usually when they are in what's called standing heat, when they will be a little bit more receptive to a buck. And they'll pay more attention to the buck, and the buck will probably pay more attention to her at this point. So their tail will kind of wag like a dog's, actually, and be upright and kind of in a different position than what's normal for her. Sometimes their personality changes due to changes in hormones and estrogen levels and things like that. Kind of like us when, you know, we go through our we all have days where we're just kind of off. Well, sometimes their personality will change. A doe that is sometimes submissive will become rather aggressive and will stand up for herself much more. Sometimes a doe that's aggressive, this is the other side of the coin, a doe that's more aggressive and is more nasty to the other does might become a little bit more calm and a little bit more submissive to you, even without resisting. So you might notice some personality changes there, but then again, you might not. You never know. But it's important to know the general personality of your doe, because this will help you pick up on any changes, especially now when you're wondering whether or not they're in heat. Sometimes their tail will get kind of sticky. They will become, their vulvas may become sort of swollen and red and things like that. They may have a tiny bit of mucus, probably not a lot, but there may be a tiny bit of mucus on the bottom of their tail, and the underside of their tail, so be warned about that. Sometimes if they are milking, their milk volume may change. She might not want to get on the milking stand today, or she just may seem kind of funny. She might give more milk than normal, she might give less milk than normal. It all just depends on the doe. Sometimes your doe may act a little bit bucky, is the term. If there is no buck present when a doe comes into heat, she may actually mount other does. Of course, this is not, I have not seen this really in too many of my does, but it is possible. Some does will notice, the other does may notice that she has a kind of a different odor about her due to the change in pheromones that she's got going on, and they themselves may act a little bit bucky. So keep an eye on that. Sometimes they, if they're in heat, sometimes they'll actually urinate or pee more often. This is because, again, the pheromones, the buck will pick up on the pheromones in the urine, and so she's peeing a little bit more often to kind of be like, hey, what's going on? I'm here, you know. And so if a doe that's in heat pees in front of a buck that's interested in her, it's actually kind of disgusting, but you may notice that he will actually kind of try to not necessarily drink it, but he might kind of lick it or kind of taste it and try to kind of get in there while she's peeing. This is how he picks up on those pheromones. And he'll definitely probably try to sniff it and kind of get close to her. And then he'll actually curl, he may raise his head and then curl his upper lip. And this is what's called a Fleming response. They actually have some sensors on the inside of their upper lip that help them detect the pheromones better. And this is how he knows where she's at in her heat cycle. You'll see horses and sheep, and I think cows do this too, but definitely, I know for a fact horses do this as well. And it's very interesting and kind of comical to watch them doing this. So that's another interesting thing. Sometimes the buck will act a little bit goofy as well, when she comes into heat. He'll wag his tongue, he'll kind of paw the ground with his hooves or kind of slap the ground with his front hooves. And this is the thing that most people don't like about bucks. This is sometimes why people prefer not to have a buck on their property when they have does, is because bucks that are kind of hot and bothered, for lack of a better term, will actually get super excited and will sometimes pee on their own faces, pee on the back sides of their front legs, pee on their belly. They will pee all over themselves, and it does not smell good. I cannot even describe what bucks smell like, but it's not good. They don't necessarily smell like a dead animal, but it's definitely very musty and very powerful, very strong smell. Like if you get it on you at all, you're gonna have to like take off your clothing and wash it really, really good to get the smell out. And sometimes with a buck that's extra smelly, and we've actually had a buck like this, sometimes if you just get near the pen that he's in, you will smell it at this point when they, and it's especially strong when they're in rut. So there's that. And there is also this smell when he's near does. If he is too close to does that are milking, this scent and this smell can actually affect the doe's milk. And this is actually called milk taint or buck taint, I mean. And we'll cover that topic in a different episode, but some of you know what I'm talking about, and it's a thing. So when the doe is further along in her heat cycle, probably towards the end, middle to the end, she will actually be in what's called standing heat. And this is exactly what it sounds like. She will actually stand and be receptive to the buck. She will actually let him mount her and do his thing. So this is standing heat, and sometimes they can go through a few days of this. It can last up to probably, 12, 24 hours, depending on the breed and depending on the doe. So standing heat is definitely another sign that your doe is in heat, and that's fairly unmistakable. the buck rag. Now, I actually have not used this before. I have actually not used this trick, but I've heard that it can actually be a fairly good test, a fairly good indicator. So you take a rag and you rub it on the forehead or on the body of a mature buck. And then you're going to place it in a sealed container. And when you open the container, or when you let a doe who is in estrus or in heat kind of smell it, she may or may not show signs of excitement. And if she does, like flagging, peeing excessively, otherwise getting excited or acting silly, it's a fairly good indication that she is probably in heat at this point. So, those are the basic signs of heat. There's a little bit more to them than that. And again, every doe is different. Not every doe will show every single sign of being in heat. Some of them may only show a few of them, but it helps if you know your doe's personality fairly well so that you can pick up on any changes that may indicate that she's in heat. So, you've caught your goat in the heat cycle, you've exposed her to the buck, and she's bred. She's carried the baby the whole, or babies the whole 5 months. And now you want to know what to look for when she's getting ready to actually have the baby. So, there's a couple of different stages of labor. Just like us, it's a process and it can take quite a long time. It can take up to 6 to 12 hours from beginning to end. However, there is going to be a point where you will want to, you're going to want to keep an eye on her if you can. I like to be there when they're having their babies, at least for the first time, if I can. But there's going to be a point where you want to keep an eye out on them because you're going to want to know when to call the vet, and we'll get to that in a second. So the labor can last several hours, but the first stage, she'll experience contractions. The uterus will contract, and the cervix will dilate, and the babies at this point should be in fairly good position for kidding, but they'll probably move just a little bit more at this point. She'll be kind of restless at this point. She may get up and lay down and get up and lay down and get up and lay down and walk around and get up and lay down. And you'll notice that she's not comfortable. They may want to be left alone. They may not want to be left alone at this point. Depends on the personality. Sometimes the personalities can flip during this point. So a doe that's, happy being around people might want to be by herself. A doe that doesn't normally want to be around people might want to be around you at this point. So just kind of be aware of that. They will usually try to go somewhere away from the herd and away from the other goats. So if you're seeing that your doe is kind of, if you know she's pregnant and she's kind of going off by herself a little bit more today, you're noticing, then keep an eye on her because she's telling you that she's getting close. She's thinking about it. There may be some slight mucus discharge, but sometimes this doesn't always happen until hours before they go into labor. So mucus discharge can come anywhere from about a week to a few hours before they actually go into labor and kid. So that's another sign. The second stage of labor is actually parturition, the act of giving birth. So she'll start pushing, contractions will get much more intense. The baby will start moving down the birth canal, and you'll actually start to see her water. Her water will break at this point probably, and you'll start seeing the baby. So a minute ago, I mentioned that you're gonna want to keep an eye on her and call the vet at a certain point. So when she has been actively pushing for 30 minutes, and certainly no longer than about 45 minutes, but I would give her a good 30 minutes. If she goes over 30 to 45 minutes of pushing, you need to call the vet or you need to start thinking about, okay, what's going on here? What's the issue? Most of the time, once they start pushing, they have the baby out in like 5 minutes, you know. But if it's a first-time mom, or if it's a really big kid, or if it's a baby that's malpositioned, and we can talk about that in just a minute, the pushing process may take a little bit longer. So keep an eye on her and don't let her push more than about 30 to 45 minutes. Because at this point, she's going to be really tired and she won't have energy and she'll just give up. So you'll need to call the vet at that point if she goes over that time frame. Or if you see a kid that is coming backwards, you know, if you see hind legs, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You can get past that. But if you're seeing a butt, or if you're seeing or feeling a tail or only a tail, or if she's pushing and not getting anywhere and nothing is coming out, then you need to call a vet. The discharge that will be, you know, coming from her vagina basically will be thick, you know, it'll be thickened at this point. And again, you should have already seen the waters break, and now what you're seeing is amniotic membrane, the sac that the baby was in. And this is normal. You want to see what's called the Superman presentation. You'll see the front feet quickly followed by the nose and head, and that's normal. If you're seeing, like I said, if you're seeing hind feet or a tail, that's called breech. And that's an issue, but you can deal with it. So now that we've talked about the birth process a little bit, let's talk about dystocia, which we already kind of covered with issues that can happen. So dystocia is difficult or abnormal birth and delivery. That's what it means. It's rare in goats, but again, it can happen. So some abnormal positions that goats can present, that baby goats can be presenting with, is breech, obviously. They can be sideways, so you or a vet will have to go in there and turn the baby in the correct way. Their front feet may be forward, but their head may be turned back. So that makes things a little bit more difficult. And I actually have had a doe that kitted that way, and she actually did pretty good, but she did have a kid that was badly positioned with its head back. The head could sometimes be down between their front legs, so you may see front legs or feel front legs, but you don't feel a head. So try to feel down between the front legs and either side of the front legs and above the front legs. Try to find the shoulders, and that should lead you to the head and neck. Let's see, what else? That's basically, those are the ones that I can think of. So I actually had a doe years ago. Her name was Izzy, and she was a nice big white sonnen. And she was pregnant, and I was excited, and the time was getting close for her to have her babies. So, and I check them all the time when they are pregnant and getting closer, you know, I check on them all the time. I practically live out in the goat pen, you know, keeping an eye on them. So I got up in the morning and I went outside and I checked on her, and I checked her tail ligaments, which is another thing I forgot to mention to look for when they are getting close to labor. So I'll mention that in a minute. I actually went out and felt her tail ligaments, and they were pretty much gone. So I knew that she was getting close. So I grabbed her and I moved her to the yard where I could see her, and I kind of tied her to a tree. She was eating grass. She was happy. And then within like an hour, I noticed that she was having her baby. So I went out there and was, you know, watching her and trying to help her. And she actually had a baby that was coming backwards or breech, and his hocks got stuck in her pelvis. So I could just barely see his feet. And I couldn't get my whole hand in there to unhook him. So I was afraid I was going to have to call the vet. But I actually did end up getting 2 fingers under his legs and straightening them out, and she did fine. So that's, and to me, that's like the greatest example of why it's important to really keep an eye on your goats and really watch them when they are in labor or when they're getting close to being in labor. Because she probably would have been fine, but the baby probably would have died before she got it out. So, and he lived, he was great, but he probably would have died before she was able to get him out on her own if somebody hadn't been there to keep an eye on her. So, something to think about there. So, the tail ligaments. They actually have 2 ligaments that run on either side of their tail that kind of are firm and keep the tail in a normal position, keep the tail head, I should say, in a normal position. And when they are getting close to having their babies, their muscles in their, the muscles in their pelvis and their tail ligaments will relax. So you can actually go and put your hand around, you can use your fingers and kind of reach around their tailbone, so to speak. And it's very soft and can be very squishy. And that's not a foolproof indicator that they are getting close to kidding. But most people find that it's a fairly good indication. Sometimes the tail ligaments can come and go in the weeks before kidding. But usually once they're gone, when it's nice and soft around their tail head, that's a good sign that they're getting ready. So, what do you need in your supply kit to be ready for your goat to have babies? Well, I use the laundry detergent buckets that are at Costco, the buckets of laundry detergent. When I love using an empty one of those. You can use that, or you can use a 5-gallon bucket, or you can just use a Rubbermaid tub. It has to be something with a lid that can be kept dry, that water won't get in. And so I just like using a Costco detergent bucket. Plus, it doesn't have to be a gigantic container. So I like to have newspaper so that I can lay the babies on newspaper when they're born. I like to have towels, plenty of towels, like regular size towels, and then like hand towels. Plenty of those, not a ton, but, you know, quite a few, because they're only good for, like, one kid at a time. So, you use some for one, and you have to get new ones for if they're twins and everything, so plenty of towels. I actually like to use dental floss to tie off the umbilical cord. So, the umbilical cord will actually snap in the birth canal as they're being born. So, you shouldn't have to worry a whole lot about, like, cutting the cord or anything. But I like to use that to tie off the umbilical cord and then cut off any extra underneath it. I use iodine to cure the umbilical cord. I dip the umbilical cord in it, and that helps dry it up faster, I found. And because it is moist and going directly into the abdomen, it picks up a lot of dirt and stuff, and you don't want to get any infection basically going on in there, because if they get an infected umbilical cord or an infected navel, it's right into the abdominal cavity. So you really want to be careful about that. I have a stethoscope in there. I have gloves in there. I have a little bit of like OB jelly or KY jelly or some sort of lubrication in case I do have to go in, basically. What else? It might not hurt to have a little notebook in there just so you can write down, like, the date the babies were born if you need to remember it. What else do I have in there? Those are just, some of the basics. You're gonna want something for suction. I just have like a little tiny bulb syringe that you can use to clear out the baby's nose and mouth, because sometimes they can get some gunk in their mouth and pretty far back, so you probably want to make sure that you have one of those. And then I like to have molasses in there, like a little jar of molasses or ribbon cane syrup or Carol syrup for the mom and for the baby, but mainly for mom because she's had a hard day. She's just, had some babies, lost a lot of fluids, lost a lot of blood. So after she has her babies, I'll usually get a bucket and take it inside, get some nice warm water in there, and mix in some molasses with it until it turns not super dark, but fairly dark, about the color of iodine, and then like about the color of watered down iodine, so she gets a good amount of molasses in there. And what that's gonna do is it's just gonna make her feel better, and it's gonna bring her blood sugar up and help prevent anemia. You may want to have some electrolytes in there or some sort of calcium supplement that you can give to her quickly if she goes down with something like milk fever. Milk fever is not super common in goats, but I actually have had one goat in particular die of milk fever, and I didn't quite know what it was until it was too late, like until she'd already died. So you want to have a couple little pick-me-up things like that in your birth kit for mom. You're gonna want to have probably like a collar and a leash or a halter if she's halter trained, or have a milking stand nearby in case you need to have her, in case things get like really bad and you need to have her holding still, like you have to have a vet come out and do a C-section or something crazy like that. You're gonna want to have a way to hold her still. And that's about it. Those are just some of the basics. There's probably lots of things that I left out. But those are just some of the basics. So why do we breed our does? Well, like I said earlier, we show our goats at the fair most of the time. And if they're breed stock, they have to be in milk. They have to be carrying milk. And in order to do that, they have to have had a baby at some point. Unless, there are people who keep their does in milk for like years, but most people who show their goats, or especially if you're in 4-H, most of the time they will breed them and dry them up, and then they'll have them be in milk again. So that's why we do it. And also, people who have goat dairies. Again, it goes back to in order to have milk, you have to have had a baby at some point. And you can keep a doe in milk for like 2 years if she's managed well nutritionally, if she has enough nutrition, and if she's young and healthy enough, you can actually do that. So she doesn't have to have babies every year, but it does help. Milk is good, goat milk is good for things like ice cream. You can make goat milk ice cream, you can make goat milk fudge. You can make goat milk soap. You can drink goat's milk. It's good for a lot of different kind of stuff. So that's a little bit about the why we breed them. And then, of course, who doesn't love cute little cuddly baby goats? So there's probably a few things I left out, but that's the gist of kitting season. Like I said, it's just my absolute favorite time of year. I love seeing the babies, naming the babies, delivering the babies, watching them grow, and watching their personalities develop. Just so much fun. And I hope you guys have fun too doing that. Little shout out to another awesome podcast channel, Tea with Mike, is going around out there. He posts a few things on Facebook as well. He does interviews with lots of cool people. He's a major tea enthusiast, so if you like a good cup of tea also, please do check him out. Also, The Bell Life by Trey and Justin Bell is a YouTube channel that's just absolutely hilarious. They're always doing some crazy awesome stuff there going on. So go ahead and get on your YouTube channel and check them out, and hope you enjoy them as much as I do. Please feel free to check out my YouTube channel, Gets My Goat by Rachel Howell. Gonna have a new video coming up here pretty soon for you guys, so hopefully you have enough time to check that out, and I hope you enjoy it. Please like, share, and subscribe to the YouTube channel, and I will see you next time, where our next episode will kind of be a spin-off of the baby goat subject, and we'll be talking about bottle feeding and orphaned or rejected babies, how-tos, do's and don'ts, some cautions, and what a baby needs. Thanks. Join us next time.